Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Let's Get Lost, a Let's Get Critical podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Jay. I'm Jesse.
And I'm A. I'm Andreas.
And we are here today to talk all about Season 5, Episode 3, Jughead.
Oh, yeah, like the Archie character.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Jughead, his friend with the hat.
Archie character?
Yeah, like the comics.
Archie. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Well, that's fair. To be fair, I only know this because there is a sad time frame of my life where I really watched Riverdale.
That's Archie.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. The thing about Riverdale. Yeah, it's based on the Archie comics.
Yeah.
For everyone to come learn.
That's right. I did know that actually. I watched the first like 3 or 4 episodes of Riverdale, and I was like, I absolutely cannot do this. Like, there's no way I can get invested in this.
You know, the thing about it is that it gets even crazier than it starts off as. So,
are you saying that that should be our next podcast?
You know, I would actually do that because I didn't finish it. I know how it ends, but I did stop watching it so I would, you know, it's something to think about.
It could be a good time. Well, we are here to talk about Lost, not Riverdale.
No.
So in that sense, thank you for your patience in terms of getting out our episodes. We've had some really weird schedule changes and just some things with releasing episodes that have gone on. So you should be getting this episode if all goes as planned. You should be getting this episode as a standalone release. And then episode 4, The Little Prince, will come out on Sunday. And so bear with us. We are trying to get back on schedule, but it has been a little bit hectic for both of us. So please know that we are still receiving your questions, and we are still attempting to get to back to the normal place where we release one episode on Wednesday, one on Sunday. I wanna briefly hit on other housekeeping things. First and foremost, our thank yous. Thank you for your loyal listenership. Please continue to engage with us. Head over to our Instagram, follow us there. Send us your direct messages with your questions, comments, theories, predictions, all the things you want us to discuss on the show. The best way to do that is in direct messages. You can post in the comments, but please remember to keep it spoiler free for our unspoiled listeners. And then other things, we appreciate ratings and reviews of the show, as well as downloads, subscriptions, and follows on all the podcast platforms. That really helps us get good feedback from you, as well as grow our listener base and reach more listeners who are on a Lost rewatch journey or who would like to watch the show for the first time. Andreas, have I missed anything?
No, Jesse. Other than, again, thank you guys, and welcome back for season 5. I know we're a couple episodes deep at this point, but we're excited to be here and back on schedule with all of you.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. Let's talk about Jughead.
Yeah.
This is the, as I mentioned, 3rd episode of the 5th season. It originally aired on January 28th of 2009. And it was watched by, for its premiere, it was watched by 13.009 million American viewers.
009.
As you all know at this point, every week, I make Andreas guess where the episode falls on IGN's list of all episodes of Lost. So they have kindly ranked 113 episodes of this great show. Where might you guess that they ranked Jughead?
Jughead. You know, I think I've started to notice what the pattern here is with the IGN list, Jesse. Here's my theory, which we'll put to the test here to see if it's true or false. But my theory, my hypothesis here is that we tend to disagree on, like, you know, I think, like, when we get to the extreme ends of, like, I really dislike this or I really like this, that's when I tend to deviate from the IGN list. But when we're in it together with, like, you know, that was fine. That was an episode. I feel like we're able to recognize that universally. And so I believe that this is one of those episodes. That was, but fine. It was a good episode. It was a good episode of Lost, but for that reason, I'll go in the 50s.
It would seem your theory is off.
Oh, damn. Well, I tried.
I appreciated hearing it, though. It was actually quite funny to hear it, knowing how off it was. So thank you for that entertainment. They really enjoyed this episode, as did I. Oh. I love this episode. I think this is one of my all-time favorite episodes of Lost. And it would seem they agreed. They ranked it at number 8.
8? Holy fucking shit. Jesus Christ. Whoa. 8?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Yes.
Wow, that really rocked my socks, clearly.
Well, let me read to you what I can from this. It is largely summary, so that will be helpful as we're going to provide a summary for you anyway. So here's what they have to say. Season 5 immediately jumped straight into some of the most trippy material we'd seen on Lost.
It's as true.
Locke, Sawyer, Juliet, and the rest who stayed behind on the island found themselves constantly shifting between time. But it was the third episode, Jughead, which had our favorite use of the time shifts, sending our characters to the 1950s, and a crucial encounter with Richard Alpert and the others. We pretty much had to include this episode just on the basis of the reveal of young Charles Widmore among the others. An incredibly fun aha moment in the show's history, which instantly gave us a new perspective on the increasingly important Widmore and his obsession with the island. Let's see, what else can I say? There was a lot more, including the source of the title, a hydrogen bomb brought to the island by the U.S. Army. We got another intriguing look at Richard Alpert, seeing the never-aging other firmly entrenched as the apparent one and only leader of his people during this point in time. And we find out that Desmond and Penny had a son and named him Charlie.
They did.
I'm sorry, guys. This is hilarious. It says, all this, plus we find out Desmond and Penny had a son and named him Charlie. Come on, you can say it. Aw. Unless he's named after Penny's dad, that is. Dot, dot, dot. I never thought about that.
I never thought about that either. Oopsie daisies. Well, I guess,
you
kill two birds with one stone. When you're around dad, that's definitely what the story is. When you're not around dad, you can tell everybody what the real story
Absolutely.
is.
Absolutely. I like that, actually. That seems like Penny seems like a smart woman. That seems like something she might have considered, you know?
Absolutely. I think it's pretty good strategy on her part. Start hedging your bets, but.
So it sounds like we had a difference of opinion in the sense that you thought this was okay, and I really loved it.
Yeah, I guess that there's certainly a lot. I do think I do like the time travel stuff. I think that I would agree with the IGN thing. I think at least in thus far, I won't give too much of a forecast
sure.
of what my thoughts and feelings are. But in thus far, I think that this is the coolest use of it so far. I think. We talked about it. Some of the Desmond stuff didn't land super well. But, I did think that it was a good plot episode. But that's sort of where, I think for me when I'm like thinking about the best episodes, unless the plot stuff is super crazy, over the top, then I'm tending to look, I think, for other things going on in the episode. So the last episode that we talked about, Hurley's episode, which name I can't remember off the top of my head, but
The Lie.
Yeah, The Lie. I actually thought that there was a lot, I don't think the plot moves along quite as quickly, or there's not as much suspense, I think, in the episode. But there's a lot to chew on in terms of the characters and what's going on with them and their perceptions of what's going on, who's right, who's wrong, why do they feel that way or whatever. And so, I think that
I will say too, for the unspoiled listeners,
yes.
Unfortunately, you can't know much, but yeah. In our spoiled section of last week's episode, The Lie, we really did go into some really deep things that can actually be drawn from this episode that we can't share with you. But
yeah.
I would agree with you, Andreas, that this does not offer that as
much.
Yeah,
definitely. And so I think that that's also probably part of it was that I was I really, really loved The Lie. And then this episode was good. It was fun, but I think I was kind of sitting back down and being like, I'm going to jump back into it. And that was where a lot of my thoughts and my feelings sort of were. And then this was sort of what followed up. There was like some essence of a letdown, but again, not to say that I didn't by any stretch of the imagination dislike the episode, really liked it, thought it was fun, you know, all of that stuff. But that's where I think a little bit of my trepidation comes from. And I think thinking about it and being like, well, yeah, I think contextually based on how I was feeling last week, I think that explains some of my feelings.
I think that that makes so much sense. I actually agree with you a lot. I think the reason that I like this episode is that, or that it really resonates with me, is I do feel like we get some answers to some questions in this episode. And I always really appreciate when we're finally given some answers to things. And I feel like we got those, you know, some of the things we've been talking about. Well, let's just start breaking it down.
Let's just go from the top.
I think it makes the most sense for this one, actually, because it's kind of confusing of what to consider flashbacks and flash forwards. And let's just go chronologically through the episode, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
So we start off with Penny and Desmond on the boat. And I have to admit that my heart really went out to Penny in this early part, because what a predicament she's in, right?
Like, I mean,
she's got Desmond talking what kind of sounds like crazy talk, but it's not actually, like, it is actually real and it is actually genuine, and she's trying to believe it. He wants to go back to Oxford, and she's like, we can't run into my father. And she's like, you know, recognizing that her father is a piece of crap, and she doesn't want Desmond to run into him. And she's in a predicament, though.
Yeah, yeah. She's in a pickle, you know. She's on the run from her own dad. Her partner is... got a lot going on upstairs, and I think that'd be really hard to navigate.
yes indeed. We also find out pretty early on that they have a kiddo at this point. We don't find out till later, of course, that his name is Charlie, but we find out that they've had a kid.
They do, Charlie, and as we discussed earlier.
Yes. So that is ultimately, you know, I have to say, Penny is a good person, because, you know, she handles that whole situation with a lot of grace and class, and ultimately, okay, I guess you're going to Oxford, because you're not going to be able to let this go unless we do that. So off they go. On the island, we've got Daniel and company with meeting a woman who's got a gun pointed at them. And that's pretty scary for Daniel, I have to assume.
Yep, you know, that's, you wake up from a time hopping and you got a gun in your face and no one seems to know who these people are. Yeah, it's pretty confusing, to say the least.
And then similarly, we've got Juliet and Sawyer and Locke, and who else is with them?
Miles
is with them. No.
No.
Miles is with...
Oh, yeah, he's with the others.
He's with Charlotte, Daniel and Charlotte.
Is it just them?
Who else is with them? Maybe it is just them.
Might be. And then...
Anyways, point is, they are where we left off in the previous episode, or I don't remember if it was the previous one or the one before that. Whatever. Point is, they are with two guys who also have guns pointed at them, but Locke has stepped in and saved the day, and they're speaking Latin.
Yeah,
and I loved that interaction where Juliet says that they're speaking Latin because they're others.
Mm-hmm. So I think that that's an interesting little nugget there. Obviously, dead language. I can't remember. Somebody makes a joke about that. I think it's Sawyer.
Probably, that seems right.
And so, you know, do you know anyone who can speak Latin, Jesse?
I do not. I know a couple of friends that took Latin in high school as their language. In my high school, we had the choice to take Latin, German, or Spanish. And I had a couple of friends that chose Latin.
Yeah, well,
Helpful if you are going to go into the medical field.
It's
or
helpful if you go into the medical
field.
Yeah. No, the only person I know who remotely knows any of it is a like. Are you okay, babe? I'm gonna go help her. I'm gonna come right back.
We're gonna pause. So Andreas's wife is okay, in case anyone was worried. Yes.
In case anyone wants to double check on that. She's doing good.
All right. So we've got the reveal that they're others and that's why they're speaking Latin. And at some point in all of this, we go back to Daniel and Charlotte and Miles, and we see Richard. And Richard looks the exact same, even though we're in the 1950s.
Yeah. As always. Yeah, no. I also realized something. You know, we always talk about Richard's eyelashes, but really, I think the thing about Richard is
it's the eyeliner.
And it's the brow. It's the brow to lashes, I guess eyeliner. It's both of it, right? But it's the ratio, because they're really close. You know, a lot of people, got some distance in between your eyebrow and your eyelashes. But Richard, structure of his face, there's not as much of a distance. So then you add the eyeliner, and then it's just like these black pits.
I'm just going to say, it works for me. I think he's very attractive.
It works. No, it's a vibe. It's absolutely a vibe. I was just saying.
Yeah.
I never understood the whole, everything that was going on. And now you got it. Matthew Richard. So. No, I think so. But it's why I can't look as cool as him. I got these brow ridges.
Don't take it too hard. I don't think anyone can look as cool as him.
Yeah. That's fair.
So he looks the same. We find out that the woman who had a gun pointed at Daniel is named Ellie. And then we find out that Ellie goes in to talk to them in the tent. And they're concerned about whether or not they can trust Daniel and Charlotte and Miles, because they believe that they're part of the U.S. military. And Daniel says, okay, the best way for us to stay alive is for us to continue to have them think that. And Ellie comes in and Daniel confesses his love for Charlotte.
He does. He says, she's like, why can I trust you? And he's like, because I love the woman
sitting
beside me.
Because I'm in love with the woman sitting next to me. I wrote it down.
Well, you know.
So, of course.
Hopeless romantic, yes, Daniel Faraday. Yes.
So he makes that confession, which I thought was a pretty great reveal. It's pretty cheesy, but I liked it. Not going to lie. And then we find out that back at Juliet, Sawyer, and Locke's situation, that Juliet convinces them, convinces the two guys, that take me to see Richard Alpert. And they're like, whoa, how does she know who Richard Alpert is?
Richard Alpert is, yeah, exactly.
How would she know? And of course, that convinces the one guy, but the other one, not so much. And he breaks the neck of his colleague and runs away. And Locke won't kill him.
Nope. Gotta do what you gotta do, I guess.
He's clearly got some trust issues. So then off the island, we've got Desmond going to Oxford and finding out that there's no record of Daniel Faraday. Which is interesting, because we know that he's been there.
Yeah, we've been there before with Desmond.
And ultimately,
it's true.
Someone at Oxford up in Daniel's old office area reveals to Desmond that something sketchy happened. So Oxford wiped their knowledge of Daniel Faraday because of what he did to that young girl, I believe is what happened. And we find out that, you know, Desmond goes to see who that woman is, and her name's Teresa, and she's not in a very good position. She is not well.
No. No. She's, I mean, not functioning. Not functioning.
And we find...
I don't mean to laugh at that.
No,
sorry.
I mean, Teresa, you said it. But... You said it perfectly. She's not functioning. She is has a very, very, very vacant look on her face. And her, I think it was her sister, I think she said, maybe. Whoever it is that answers the door when Desmond gets there tells her that, or tells Desmond that they're very lucky that Mr. Widmore is paying for all of Teresa's medical expenses, and that Mr. Widmore funding Daniel's research. Yes. This is a huge reveal.
Yes. Yes. Yep. He was funding it directly. And
so now he did something. This does shed Teresa. Some new light on Daniel's behavior over the last season and a half, or season and three episodes, right? Because he was on Widmore's boat. And
yes, he was on Widmore's boat. He was, he was part of the cast of characters. It was a mission that, you know, Widmore put that expedition crew together. And so, yeah, it makes it real interesting. I do believe, Jesse, we can't answer this fully, but we did, one of our ongoing questions was how much did the people on the boat know about Charles Widmore and know about what was going on? Now, obviously, we can't fully fill in all those gaps, but we can at least say that it's pretty obvious that Daniel Faraday was aware
and
of
I
who
will
Charles
say,
Widmore was. Now, how much he can globalize that, right, or generalize it, I'm not sure, right?
We can leave there. Well, but I do think that's answers. Actually really interesting to note that I think that that's really consistent, actually, with what we've been given in the previous episodes, right?
Yes.
When Daniel first gets to the island, he is kind of sketchy about why they're there, right? More so than Charlotte and Miles and Frank Lapidus are. They are a little bit more like, look, we're here for our specific reasons, and we don't really know much about what the real mission is. Daniel's a little bit more, he's the one that says, like, yeah, not exactly. We're not exactly here to rescue you, right? Mm-hmm. He seems to have a greater understanding of at least the possibility that something sketch is going on. Which, even if Widmore didn't reveal the full details of the plan to him, this to me suggests that Daniel knows Widmore well enough. Like, it sheds light on his previous way of talking about their mission on the island, that he at least grasped the possibility that Widmore might consider doing something sketchy to the people that were left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It begs the question of, does Penny know about, like, Penny is Widmore's daughter, right? And Widmore's funding Faraday's research. Does Penny know about Faraday? Like, it's begging all these questions, right? We don't have answers to them, but it's another instance of lost building connections.
She does seem confused that he's going to Oxford. Yeah. You'd think if she knew, she could have put those gaps together, but she could have been fronting that. Who knows? You
know?
But I agree with you. Dots are being connected.
So back at the camp, we see the young man who escaped from Locke and Juliet and Sawyer. Valerie. He is back, and he is reporting to Richard that there's some people out there and we gotta take care of it. And Richard is like, they're gonna follow you back here. And the line is, you think he knows this island better than I do about Locke, which is a pretty awesome quote.
And yeah, he's like an old man, and you think he knows the island better than I do, then he can traverse it better than me or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
it's
just like cuts
great.
Him off.
It's pretty great. So what's interesting about this that I wanted to point out is that, so ultimately we do get Locke and Juliet and Sawyer showing up to the camp and going into the camp to make contact.
Yeah.
Sawyer is approaching it more from the perspective of rescuing Daniel. Locke is approaching it more from the perspective of talking to Richard, right? And we did get a listener who wrote in that I thought I should read the listener's perspective. And it says, once again, Locke goes into business for himself, choosing to explore his own specialness by seeking out Richard rather than helping Sawyer rescue Daniel. He wants so badly to be someone special and seeks that validation rather than realizing he should just learn to be content with who he is. Yep. And I think that there's some really valid points in there. I do think that some of it is still coming from, and I've said this from day one, but I do think some of it is still coming from, you know, Locke's desire to, I guess, understand the people on the island that are, you know, like the others. And I think we get a little bit more indication of that in, was it this episode? Yeah, no, it is in this episode, right? When he refuses to shoot the man and says, because he's one of my people. Yeah. I actually thought that was a really powerful moment for Locke. Saying, I'm not going to shoot him because he's one of my people. Because I think it does speak to, yes, I think there is some disingenuous motives there in terms of wanting to be special and wanting to be validated and things like that. But I do think that Locke actually cares about the people that he sees as being the leader of. The issue is that he doesn't care about the people that he doesn't care about the Oceanic 815 individuals, and he really never has, right?
No, yeah.
And that's very clear. But yeah. I think his concern is for who he now sees as his people, because he sees himself as the leader of these people, because that role has essentially been given to him at this point in time. And I thought
I was just going to say that I thought that was a good
moment for him that did at least bring some semblance of understanding to kind of, for me anyway, how he's navigated this whole situation. Like, he's trying to get to a place where he's with who he sees as his people, right? He hasn't really felt connected at any point to Oceanic 815.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of that is his own, right, sort of fault. He is part of them. He has just refused, really, to be integrated. And then, yeah, so I definitely get what you're saying. I didn't have that initial impression, but I definitely get what you're saying. I do think it's growth. It's also growth in the sense of, even like short term, you know, really up until the beginning of this season, at kind of the end of season four, we were seeing a different Locke that was kind of doing whatever, consequences be damned, just, you know, head first, just going through it. He's still doing that, but this is the first time that we're seeing him do that without, like, you know, I think he would have been more callous, and he would have, you know, just taken the casualty. And not really thought about it. And then in an instant sense, he was like, well, no, I'm not going to do that because I actually,
I have some sense of responsibility for this person that he hasn't felt towards anyone else other than the others.
Yeah.
And that's been, you know, I don't want to justify some of the things Locke has done, but the grace that I do want to extend to him is that he's really only been able thus far to have some of those conversations with Ben Linus, which is really not ideal in terms of if you're wanting to find your place in a community of people that you do feel connected to, because you want to be on the island. You don't want to leave the island. You think the island is special, right? Locke doesn't feel like anyone that he's been with up until this point feels that way, because they're all trying to get off the island, right?
Yeah.
And so he's found, you know, and when I say finally, I mean, you know, at some point in season three, arguably, he found the people that he did feel a greater sense of connection with. But the conduit to those people was Ben Linus, which is not a position I think anyone wants to be in. So that's the grace that I will extend to Locke, in terms of the fact that up until now, he's had an uphill battle with breaking into this group. Now he kind of has the group, and he has the group's attention, and he arguably is doing the right thing by them. And you can be mad about that. You can hate that for the Oceanic 815 folks, right? Because he has done some really harmful things to them and to their ability to get off the island. He blew up the submarine, right? He attacked Naomi, who they thought was there to help. He killed her when she was there to help, right? He has gone to war with Jack about things. And so you can hate all of that, and you can disagree with all of that. And I think see that he never saw those as his people. He never saw those as his community. And that doesn't make what he did right, but I think it sheds an explanation on his behavior, at least for me.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that doesn't make sense to me about Locke's behavior in this episode is Richard told him in no uncertain terms the last time that Locke saw him that Richard would not know who Locke was the next time that they met. And Locke goes storming into the camp and, like, I guess seems surprised that Richard doesn't recognize him. And it's like, he told you, dude. Like, he literally told you.
He literally told you. Yeah. 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 I don't know. I mean, I guess to some extent it's like he didn't know what else to do. So he just figured he'd antagonize the situation and see what happened. But yeah, I was kind of having the same thought with you the whole time where I'm like, why are you? I mean, I guess you have no other sense of direction. That's your only sense of direction. But I don't know what you expect the outcome here to be. That seems about it. So
then we go off the island again, and Desmond goes to confront Widmore about the fact that Widmore has been funding Daniel's research and is paying for Teresa's medical bills. And in that conversation, Widmore does provide Desmond with Daniel's mother's address.
Yes.
And then...
Mm-hmm. And tells him to go hide.
Yep. And then back on the island, of course, we get the reveal that that young man is, in fact, Charles Widmore. And so this, we have been getting some listener questions about this. So to verify, this is how Widmore knows about the island. And that's why I couldn't say anything about it to you or to the listeners, because I knew this was coming. I knew that he had been on this island in the 50s when this was all going on. And so I couldn't say anything about that. But now we finally know he was there at least some point in the past. Now, we don't have any answers as to whether or not he was born there at this point. We don't know anything other than at that point in time that we just experienced in this time flash, he was there.
Yep.
And then, of course, we find out that Penny and Desmond named their kiddo Charlie. And the episode ends on Charlotte going down. She's got blood coming out the nose and the mouth, and she's down for the count.
Yeah, it's almost like she got KO'd by time.
You guys can't see me, but mind blown. All right. Anything you want to mention in the spoiler-free section? It's always interesting, these plot-heavy episodes. They're hard for us to say much besides summarize them. We did go into a couple of things, but is there anything before spoiler-free segments?
No. Okay. No, I don't got anything too crazy. Unfortunately, I know it's hard for us to do a whole lot of theorizing with you guys here on this half, just because we want to be super-duper careful, you know?
Well, let's do spoiler-free segments then. We have... No Walt count. I mean, as far as we know,
Walt's gone.
So unless something changes or we get a flashback or something like that, we will continue to count any Walts that appear in flashbacks or if we get something, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, if it happens, we're doing it. But nothing. I mean.
Similarly, no CPR in this episode. Did you have a nickname?
No.
I went with one. It's not the nickname itself isn't that funny, but it's more the delivery of the line when Sawyer refers to Daniel as the geek and he says, "Are you going to help me save the geek?" or something like that. That's in Sawyer's world, that's almost a term of endearment, I think.
It's almost.
How about a best or worst fashion choice?
Oh, I wonder I've if got it's a the worse same fashion as mine. Choice, Jesse. Is it?
It is not Faraday's hair.
In the old photo of him,
it's bad.
If any, I mean, his hair is it's big. Is what it is. It's big. I didn't know it was possible for him to have that big of hair, but apparently well, if, he did. I don't know if he got a perm. I don't know. Like,
well,
what,
if anyone would spot
there?
The bad hair, it would be you.
I spot the good
I have
hair
a feeling that
hair.
You actually won't. I don't know why I thought we might have the same, because I have a feeling you actually will not agree with this take. But I also went with a worst fashion choice, and I had to go with Desmond's scarf. I did not think he was pulling it off. I just didn't.
You know, I liked his vibe. The scarf itself, you know, I'm not a scarf guy. I wouldn't have made that decision. I'm not inherently against it, though, and I think it...
I don't know if it's just because I've gotten so used to seeing rugged Desmond on the island, right, where he's got, like, the button-up that's, like, halfway unbuttoned, and like, he's just kind of, like, a bit of a mess. Yeah. So I don't know if, like, for me, I'm just like, that's what he is to me. Like, his style is a little more rugged. And so the scarf, I was like, this doesn't work with Desmond's vibes.
He's kind
of a
preppy dude.
I guess maybe I'm having a hard time.
He's like a sailor, like, you know, like.
Maybe I'm having a hard time with that.
I think it's fair.
Okay, let's do favorite lines. I'm actually going to go first because I already said mine, actually. My favorite line is from Locke when he says, because he's one of my people. I went with a serious one. I thought that was a good line. I thought it was interesting. I thought it gave us something to chew on.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Mine, I also went with a moment of, I don't know how good the line is itself, but I thought it was a funny moment when Desmond has broken into Daniel Faraday's office because they kicked out Daniel Faraday and erased his records, but didn't get rid of the hard physical evidence that he left behind. But we're gonna not think about it. At Oxford, they're not using that room for anything. It's just
I find that hard to believe as well.
I digress. This is not Hogwarts.
That should have been a line.
That should have been a line. That should have been a line. Hey, it was a little... Well, no, Harry Potter was a thing by then. Whatever. But the line I went was with the custodian when he was like, are you a professor? And then Desmond's like, not really. And then the custodian's like, well, at least
that was pretty good. That was pretty good. All right. Well, folks, if you would like to remain unspoiled, it is time for you to get lost.
Get lost, you filthy polar bear.
All right, let's talk spoilies.
Let's do it.
So do you remember the significance of Ellie by any chance? Okay.
No.
I will not say anything else other than the fact that...
She looked familiar. I remember that she will become a person, but I don't totally remember what that role is.
Darn. Because there's a really trippy moment in this episode, if you know ultimately what Ellie's situation is, but.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't remember. All right.
What else did I have? I really liked, part of why I really liked this episode, even though this is not, they don't go into exposition on this or anything, but part of why I really liked this episode is it helped me wrap my head around what's happening with the time flashes because of the way that Richard Alpert's storyline goes, right? So Richard is experiencing things in this already happened for Richard. So this is actually the first time that he meets Locke is in the 1950s, right? Which...
Yes. Yeah, because he still experiences, he is eternal, but he is still bound to time.
And we got an answer to something that really bugged you in the past, which is why the hell does Richard go to see Locke as a kid? This is why.
Oh. Yeah, because Locke's already not dead. I mean, whatever. They met
when Locke was his age now. And Locke tells him, I'm going to be born on this day come and see me. And Richard does go and see him, right? And he tells Locke, we have a process for selecting our leaders, right? And Richard goes to see Locke and he shows him the objects and says, which of these do you own, right? Which belongs to you? So that's a big answer for an issue that kind of had left you feeling a little dissatisfied.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't like that. I mean, I still might not like it from a storytelling perspective, but that is a nice way to tie it up.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that.
So, and I think it also really speaks to kind of Richard's process in this show, right? Of like, okay, so he think of putting ourselves in his position. He's standing there. He meets Locke. He's got this guy coming in. He doesn't know anything at this point. Richard doesn't know anything about what's ultimately going to happen with these time flashes and what's ultimately going to happen with Locke. He has no knowledge other than this is the first time I meet Locke. And I think that that's really, really, it's just, to me, it's really interesting and puts so much, I don't know, it adds a lot of intrigue about Richard's process and why he's doing things that he's doing in search of a new leader.
Yeah. It's really interesting because it's also interesting to sort of think about people are able to, right? Faraday gives this example of the island being like a record and the record skipping. And so one of the fundamental questions kind of coming, right, when you're kind of thinking about the show from a top-down perspective is sort of the nature of the island. Is it, or, and Faraday says this too, either the island's moving through time or they are. And so then it's like, well, which one is it? And it's like, well, if Richard is kind of tied physically to the place, that's an interesting idea, but that doesn't necessarily solve it, right? But that's a potential clue for solving that question in and of itself. So I agree with you. There is a lot of intrigue there. There's a lot of interesting implications to potentially draw from it. How much does Richard know? He doesn't know. Do we get any sense of, you know, Jacob? What Jacob's relationship to
eventually
Simon is?
I believe so. I think that comes in season 6. I think.
Okay.
I think almost everything we know about Jacob comes in season 6. And Richard and Jacob's relationship, I believe, is also explained in season 6. Admittedly, I don't remember all the ins and outs of it, but I think that it is in that final season where we start getting some of those answers. And what we're still, the biggest glaring thing that I still have on my radar when it comes to Richard, and we have this on our list of questions that we'll be coming back to, but the biggest glaring thing that I still have is I do not remember for the life of me why Richard lets Ben just kind of like operate the way that Ben's been operating for as long as he has.
Well, I think it's because at least for a period of time, I'm not sure how long of a period of time, right? But that Ben was under the impression, Richard was under the impression that Ben was going to become the new steward
of the island. At what point did he realize that Ben is crazy and that that's not what's happening?
I don't know. And like, I guess that's a question, like, you know, we have our interpretation of what that is supposed to look like, but we don't know, like, how objective is that? Like, is that something that's, like, objective and, like, oh, I can't really say what I'm trying to say right now.
Fair.
I can't think of a good way to say it, but, like, is the nature of that role, like, you know, we understand that Hurley's going to step into it. Is it because it's not necessarily because of like he's some like there's some objective idea of like what a good person or a good steward would be. It just so happens to be that he was the only one to kind of come to peace with himself. Everybody else had various reasons why they could never do that. So I wonder how much it's like, yeah, Ben was kind of maniacal and like crazy, but from Richard's perspective, that might not be like disqualifying Right. Those aren't necessarily disqualifying traits.
Well, I wonder if the idea is that it's I don't know. I have to wait till season 6 because I think what I was about to say actually is just totally wrong. Yeah. I had a memory that popped in where I was like, no, I think that's actually not it at all. So I think we have to just keep watching it. But I will not be satisfied at the end of the show if we don't get at least some ounce of something related to why this plays out the way that it does with Ben, Richard, and Jacob. Because Ben is the odd one, right? Of it all makes sense. Like for me anyway, the Locke stuff in relation to Richard and Jacob makes sense. The Jack stuff, the Hurley stuff, it all makes sense. But Ben is the thing where I'm like, what the fuck are we doing letting Ben just run things forever when he's horrible and committed genocide? And like you said, maybe it's not actually about, you know, Ben was maybe not. Like, there's the candidate, which is, like, for the protector of the island, but maybe that has nothing to do with the others and who's in charge of the others, right? Like, at some point, those things have become separate, perhaps.
Yeah, or, like, that is, like, a... Yeah, like, it is, like, a functionally different role. So, like, you know... You know, that role maybe oftentimes overlaps, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to. I guess to be clear, did it ever? Was Jacob ever the leader of the others?
I don't think so.
No. So I actually think that that is disqualifying in some sense. So like, yeah, so like
so it's Richard, really more of a question really that it's really it. More of a That's question just... of what is Richard's role? Is Richard's role just to be around and to wait for the next protector? Like he's looking for the next protector, and for a long time it made sense to look for that in the others because that's who's on the island, right? Like presumably for a while there's nobody but the others and the Dharma Initiative as candidates to choose from, right? But and so Richard ultimately, he doesn't care. Not he doesn't care. But his job is not to fill who's going to lead the others or who's gonna lead Dharma. His job is to watch for the next protector of the island and to help facilitate that. And so it makes the most sense for him to spend as much time as he has with the others because that's presumably the pool of candidates that you're going to have to select from. But then when the Oceanic 815 folks come, that expands the possibility of finding someone else. But it doesn't answer why then would Richard not ingratiate.
And there does seem to be some desperation to do that because I think at that point it was clear that not Ben it. Was.
But then it begs the question for me of why didn't Richard ingratiate himself more with Oceanic 815? Survivors in search of the person.
There is a certain aspect of like how much foresight does Richard have too, because it could be a thing of like this is what I have to steward in order to happen, in order for the things that are going to happen later to happen. Like how much is he kind of plugged in with that? You know,
well, and ultimately, he does do some things. At least it has seemed so far. He has done some things to help facilitate Locke into the position, right? He helps Locke ensure the death of his father, Locke's father, to be able to.
Well, Locke's another good example, though. You become disqualified when you essentially assume leadership of the others. And Jack has an issue. Maybe this is an overall kind of commentary on leadership, like this idea that assuming leadership or power in that way is like always gonna kind of corrupt you, or like maybe only people who are looking for something are like gonna be willing to do that, or like, you know, are missing something and are trying to fill that or whatever. And ultimately Jack and Locke aren't able to do that, but that makes sense then. Like Ben also isn't able to do that through his leadership of the others, like, they all kind of fail at that in some regard. Jack's probably the one that's mm-hmm. able to kind of come back around it, around on it the best. But,
well, and ultimately the reason
I'm curious, that could be maybe an aspect of it, right? And so it's like, oh yeah, well, Locke really, and even in this episode, kind of if what you said, kind of going back to what you said about thinking that Locke grew a little bit, maybe that's also an indication of like, well, Locke really does see himself as this, like, he really wants to feel important and be a leader. That isn't actually what being the protector of the island would entail. And so he is not actually fit for the job because he's looking for something different.
I think.
And Ben wants power. Mm-hmm, and like, mm-hmm. that's also not what you're going to get.
No.
From being the protector of the island. So both of you are looking for the wrong thing out of this. Therefore,
I think that's plausible. And I think we will certainly. I mean, I've watched this show. This is my fourth time. And I've been satisfied at the end every time. Yeah. So I do believe that we get some resolution to how this all is structured. At least enough that I've felt satisfied with being like, okay, this is why Richard was doing what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I would agree. I remember being pretty satisfied with Richard's character.
Okay, anything else you wanted to get into for spoiler stuff?
No, I don't think so. I think, I mean, the time traveling is hard enough on the brain. So I think we can wrap this up.
Well, let's do it. Thank you all so much for hanging out with us. Please join us next time as we break down Season 5, Episode 4, The Little Prince.
See you later.
Get lost.